episode 95 of the TV News podcast, recorded August 17th, 2016. The Get Down. Randy.
Yes, Grant.
We've watched a lot of pilots in our life. A lot of TV shows that live or die based upon how good the pilot is.
As Vincent Vega once told us, some of them become nothing.
Is that what he told us?
That's what he told us.
Like, directly?
He was speaking to me and only to me, Grant.
You need to cut down on the drugs.
Look, I always do heroin when I watch Pulp Fiction, and I get an authentic experience.
Really?
Yes, yeah.
Have you made it through the whole movie yet?
No, I usually black out about 20 minutes in.
Yeah, that's a problem. You gotta cut it out, buddy. I keep telling you this. Hey, but speaking of pilots, we are lucky enough today to have the hosts of the television podcast Pilot Watching with us, Key and Clyde. Thank you guys so much for being here.
Thanks for having us.
So glad we can hang out with you guys.
Yeah, so we met you guys a few weeks back at the ATX Television Festival.
Yep.
At a little bit of a podcast mixer.
Yeah.
And we were just like, oh my gosh, you guys, your show is dedicated to actually reviewing the pilot episode of different TV shows, which sounds just perfect to me. And then I went and listened to it, and it's fantastic.
Yeah, we both became instant fans.
Yeah.
We both really like the show.
Thanks so much. We're really enjoying it. We're having a lot of fun.
Yeah, we're kind of newbies, but we couldn't ask for a better show to kind of get started with.
Yeah, it's such a great idea. And you guys go really in depth talking about these different pilots that I'm like, oh yeah, that's totally right. Like I listened to the one about Friday Night Lights, especially like because you guys got to go during ATX to the reunion show that they did, and I thought that was just like it was so neat that you guys also got to tack on this extra experience to the end and have that kind of enrich how you look back upon the pilot, and it's a really well produced show, and I'm happy to have you guys on the show.
Thanks. I mean, we love doing it, and you know, we love getting to meet guys like you who have kind of a veteran podcast.
We've been around the block, I suppose.
You know, you can just say we're old. Block. We know we're old.
You're old, Randy.
I am old, Grant.
I didn't say that.
So this got us thinking, though. What are your favorite pilots and worst pilots that you think you've seen so far?
All right, I'll start with worst and feel terrible.
Or at least lately.
Yeah, I've mentioned this on the show, but it's got to be Uncle Buck.
Oh, was it bad?
I mean, it was terrible. I hate to say it was terrible, but it was terrible. And I had huge hopes for it because there's a show that I love called Survivor's Remorse, which I think has been the best show for Mike Epps. And he left it, and they actually during the ATX Film Fest or TV Festival. They were there.
Oh, and so no.
He left it because ABC...
Was he there?
He was not.
Okay.
ABC gave him this vehicle and said, in order to do it, you've got to leave Survivor's Remorse, which is on Stars. And so he did. And then Uncle Buck came out, and the pilot was terrible.
No.
They really tried to take the entire kind of 1980s Uncle Buck and smash it into a 30-minute show. Mm-hmm. And then when you watch the next few episodes, it got much better. But by that point, it was done.
The critics ripped it apart.
Yeah. Oh,
let me ask
no.
you guys this. Do you feel like, and this seems to be a truism, that comedy pilots are rougher than drama pilots in general? Like, comedy pilots are really hard, it seems like.
I mean, I think so. I think because you've got to get to the funny really fast.
Yeah.
And make people want to come back for more. It's kind of like that opening monologue in a stand-up.
Yeah.
Like, if you don't nail it, you've lost the audience and they turn into heck.
And you don't really get a chance to invest in the characters because you're trying to make them laugh. So
right. Well, and they're going to be shorter, too.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah.
And then, with the drama, you've usually got, like, 45 minutes. And they know up front, look, we're going to introduce the characters and then we'll get to some drama. We might even kind of leave you hanging. But you're kind of in, and with a comedy, everything's got to be right there.
Right.
And especially with the fact that, you know, you have quirky characters. A quirky character in a comedy, you're like, all right, amuse me.
Yeah.
You know, it's all proving grounds. Whereas like a quirky character in a drama, you're like, oh, where's this going to go? Is this going to pay off? I'll give this a couple episodes to invest.
That's
true.
Yeah.
Yeah. I do look at comedies kind of with my arms folded thinking, all right, funny man, make me laugh.
So what about you, Key? Would you agree? Is that like one of the worst ones you've seen lately?
It's pretty bad. Yeah. It was hard to watch. And yeah, I mean, a lot of the cast tried really hard, but the writing was just kind of poor. Mm. And so I think that's where it fell short for the most part, the writing in the first episode.
Well, what would you say best? One of your favorite pilots that you've seen so
Cheers.
Far? Cheers.
Oh, Cheers for is sure. such a good pilot.
Don't just say that because Randy's here.
No, I didn't know. Are you?
Oh, I love Cheers. My all-time favorite comedies. Yeah. That pilot, every time I watch it, I know all the jokes and I still laugh.
Exactly. Yeah. I mean, I think they do a perfect job of introducing all the characters, even though they're technically walking through a door one after the other, but it just sets it up. Everyone has their spot. Their characters are, you know, their personalities come to life right away. I just think it's a perfect pilot.
Well, I just think the Sam and Diane meetup and the way that they go in, instantly you get that chemistry. And that they don't like each other and that they do like each other is that's all there.
Right. And with her tragic love story, it's just so good.
That is a fantastic pilot. Maybe the best comedy pilot. Although I know Grant's going to say Arrested Development.
You know,
it is a great pilot.
Did he steal your thunder?
No, but that's a great one. I wasn't even thinking of me answering. But yeah, I'll totally say Arrested Development. Man, I love that show. It's so amazing. What about you, Clyde?
I'm kind of an Aaron Sorkin homer, mm-hmm. I'll be honest. So I think, and I know most people, I won't say most people, there's a large contingent that don't like this show. But for me, I would say Studio 60 on the Sunset Strip.
Really?
I thought it was a really good pilot.
I thought you were going to say Sports Night.
I mean, Sports Night was good. But the thing about Sports Night is it's like watching a kind of a college athlete who you see and you go, wow, with a little bit of development,
that guy's gonna go pro.
Yeah. they're gonna be amazing because you saw the elements that would later turn into like the West Wing. Mm-hmm. I think Studio 60 was fast and I thought it was interesting in a world that I kind of wanted to know more about.
Yeah.
So I enjoyed it and got excited about it, but it also may have been a little bit of kind of like the West Wing hangover where I was like, oh, this is going to be like that.
Yeah.
So, but for me, I kind of like the pacing and some of the dialogue. I really thought that their pilot was pretty good.
I actually agree with you. I remember, and it may be the West Wing hangover, but I remember coming into that and thinking, oh, wow, what a great first episode.
Yeah, and it was pretty fun.
Slowly but surely losing interest in the show, where I don't think I even finished the entire show. But
30 Rock lived on. Take the comedy aspect.
Oh, yes, it did.
Yes.
And that lives on.
And 30 Rock's got a rough pilot. It was like the opposite, because 30 Rock's pilot is okay at best.
Yeah, you weren't quite ready. Again, it's that make me laugh.
Yeah.
And the jokes, I think the 30 Rock jokes, you got to get to them. Like, you have to hear them, and they build. And then by, like, episode, because I think we watched that, and I kind of tuned out after the pilot. Mm-hmm. And Key, I think you kept watching
because
it.
Because of Tina Fey.
Right.
Sure. Why not?
Yeah.
But I think when you start to get to like episode 8, mm-hmm. everything's funny.
Yeah.
Like I don't know if it wears on you or you just get used to it, but then everything's funny and you're laughing all the time.
They find their groove and what's his name? Teeth becomes tolerable.
Teeth?
Who's the skinny, goofy dude?
You talking about Kenneth?
Kenneth.
Got really big teeth. Jack McBrayer. I think Tina Fey also does character. She does a lot of character work. So you need to get to know those characters. And then once you know them, you can do jokes real easily because the way they interact is what makes it funny. But that's hard to do at the outset when you don't know these characters. And she also definitely does like long setups and payoffs. We've seen that in Kimmy Schmidt, too.
Right.
So, yeah, I think that, Tina Fey's comedy in particular seems to work the longer it goes on.
For sure.
Yeah.
Well, this episode, we are talking not just about a pilot, but we're going to go above and beyond and talk about the entire season of The Get Down, which just released on Netflix. Now, you guys actually covered, I'm guessing it was just the pilot.
Yes.
Or did you cover the whole show?
No.
Well, we just talked about the pilot.
That's restraint, isn't it?
Well, I hadn't watched all of it until after. But now I feel like I wish I would have because I could have said more.
No, I think it'll be interesting because people should go, because I listened to it. People should go listen to that episode of Pilot Watching, and then listen to all of Pilot Watching, by the way. But go and listen to it, because I think we're going to talk about from a very different perspective mm-hmm. here when you guys have seen the whole show. And it'll be interesting to hear the differences between that and what you thought of it when you first looked at it.
Yeah, definitely.
Yeah, I think the toughest part about having a show like Pilot Watching is the pilot is not the best episode of, or shouldn't be,
right.
the best episode of a series.
Right.
And so sometimes we're talking about a show that you're like, oh, it's a good pilot, but you have no idea if it's going to get better
yeah.
or worse.
Yeah.
So I think with the Get Down, you know, and we'll talk about this later, I got really excited later.
Yeah.
When we go to the ATX Fest, and one of the things I keep hearing from creators, or especially the writers who write the pilots of these episodes, that they're doing everything in their voice. And so when the actors come in to kind of give their input, they're still trying to feel out the character in the pilots.
Oh.
And so a lot of the time, it's not that there's no collaboration, and that's mm-hmm. what kind of holds a lot of pilots back. And it's that rare gift of getting the talent and the writer that immediately click versus a couple episodes in, or sometimes like Parks and Rec, a season in before they finally figure out like how to write for every single character, and like there's that symbiotic relationship.
But I don't know if you're ready for me to talk about this, but that's not what I didn't get from the Get Down.
Oh no. I wasn't saying that in particular.
But I do want to mention though, in yes. relation to that. When I interviewed Ted Griffin at ATX Fest, he talked about Terriers and said that, yeah, to some extent, every episode of Terriers he felt like was getting better and better because he figured out how to write for those characters and how to write them for those actors. And yeah, I think that happens a lot. And if you want to hear more insights onto Terriers, you can check out Beach Cop Detectives, a Terriers podcast, which I'm still recording, and I've got my interviews set up, and we're going to hope to release that in September. But Patreon listeners will get a sneak peek at episode one very, very soon, maybe even next week soon.
Can I say that if Terriers was actually called Beach Cop Detectives, it might still be on the air right now?
Well, that was... We got the title from Ted Griffin because he mentioned it at the panel. Like, they asked him about the title. He said, yeah, we should have just called it Beach Cop Detectives. Yeah.
Great.
Yeah. I feel like we're plugging this so early on that no one's going to listen to it. They're going to be like, oh, I'm so sick of that show.
I'm so tired of hearing about it.
We are the TV Dudes. I'm Grant.
I'm Randy.
And once again, we're joined by Pilot Watching crew, Key and Clyde. Thank you guys so much. And before we get into everything else of the show, we got some house cleaning to do. So first up, I wanted to mention iTunes. Over on iTunes, you guys can help us out by going to the store, going to the app, and finding our podcast, giving it a 5-star rating, writing a review, and that is a way to help give us more visibility, helps us out with the show, free, easy to do for you guys, and if you guys write a little review, we'll read it here on the show.
Literally anything you write.
I found this one from a while back. I don't know if I missed this one because this one's from Ireland, but Kevin Toner from Ireland says, hey guys, love the podcast. I've been listening for years. Keep them coming.
I like that. Simple, direct, and complimentary.
Yeah.
No point do they ask you to betray any of your own morals in reading the review.
So thank you, Kevin Toner. We appreciate that. And over on patreon.com/TVDudes, that's a way you guys can financially support the site if you guys are so inclined. In exchange, we've been giving bonus exclusive content. We do little mini episodes each week that we release just for you. And what did we do last week, Randy?
Last week, after much cajoling, we did a live read-through of the Seinfeld The Two Towers episode.
Oh, yes.
Which was so much fun and so wrong.
It's so wrong. So there's this comedian, for any of you who are unaware, that wrote a spec script just for fun about what the Seinfeld crew would have done in the days after 9/11. It's everything terrible that you could think of.
It's
also
so
perfect to
yes.
the show. It's perfect to the show. And, oh, man, we did a read-through.
No spoilers, because we're going to read that. I can't wait.
Oh, man.
Yeah, so that's patreon.com/TVDudes. And we want to thank our friend Nate, who signed up as Negative Nate.
Yes, his longtime screen name.
Yeah. Thank you so much for joining us, Nate.
Yes, thanks, Nate. And thanks to all our Patreons.
Yes. And now we'd like to move over to some listener questions. If you guys like us on Facebook, if you like us on Twitter, you guys can ask us questions. We'll put up a little post once a week. And our first question comes to us from Zach McLernan, who asks, has an actor's off-screen antics, political or otherwise, ever made you stop watching a show or watch it less? he gives a little example here, and not to get too political, but he says, John Voight's recent tacit support of Donald Trump has almost made me drop Ray Donovan altogether. I think that's fair. Everyone, yeah. A lot of people don't seem to like Donald Trump. That's,
or Ray Donovan.
Or Ray Donovan.
Oh, that was mean. I'm sorry. I feel bad. No, I've really struggled with this because I want to separate the artist from the art, but there's some people who just go too far. Like, but the thing is, like Mel Gibson, I think Mel Gibson's kind of a terrible person, but I still like Lethal Weapon, you know?
That was in the past.
That was in the past.
That was before, like, new stuff. You can't watch The Beaver, I'm sorry. You don't get to watch that one.
Yeah, yes, that's true, but why do you want to? It's like...
Exactly.
I'm trying to think of anybody, like, I really, like, have had to give up on.
Bill Cosby?
Oh, yeah. Ooh.
See, that's what we struggle with. I mean... Yeah. You know, and I've got the Cosby Show collection in the library.
Sure.
I have not been able to watch it.
Yeah, because it's such a classic, but everything now is colored by that.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's a heartbreaking one. That's really hard.
Because it was really good.
Yeah.
Like, if you had asked me before, best pilot, like, even when you asked me, Grant, I was thinking, do I say the Cosby Show? Because it was a really good pilot.
Yeah.
I can't say it. Like, I can't say it.
Yeah.
Yeah.
that is definitely the example to end all examples too. It's like I don't know where you go. It's like that's.
Thanks for bringing the show down, babe.
Sorry. I do that from time to time.
So we'll move on then. Kyle Volte says, "Hey TV dudes, with Larry Wilmore being rather unceremoniously canceled, do you think that this is the end of nightly political satire? Does a weekly format simply work better?"
That's a good point. Good point. 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 We'll talk about in the news. We've got the Larry Wilmore, and I'm sure we're going to have to go into it. But I do think that's interesting that my favorite shows in that vein right now are Samantha Bee and John Oliver, and those are both weekly. And I think that maybe the not having to be quite so punchy in the moment might be part of it. Might be part of what I like about it. I don't know. What do you guys think? Do you think it's just that nightly is harder to do, or?
Or do you watch them, these shows?
So, not really. But, I mean, I feel like since Jon Stewart left, there's just everything seems to be struggling in that vein.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
I don't know.
I mean, looking at the, what do they call them, nightly talk shows?
Yeah.
The Late Show with, like, Colbert and...
Yeah, Colbert and
they all seem to be, like, desperately clamoring for low ratings. Now, like, in comparison to the heyday of, like, 20 million people watching.
But do you feel like Colbert, I mean, I read something recently that he feels like he hasn't been able to be himself. And so I don't know if that's part of why he's struggling ratings-wise.
Yeah, because, like, during the RNC and the DNC, he got to kind of bring out his Stephen Colbert alter ego a little bit.
Mm-hmm.
He got to reunite with Jon Stewart a little bit, and he seemed a lot more in his element. And I think that him just kind of having to interview people, maybe it's just not his thing as much.
Yeah.
Well, I also think that there's just too many options now, right?
Yeah.
Like before, if you were talking about Letterman, like at 11 o'clock at night, what were your options, right? You had like Leno and Letterman, Conan. Like there are only a few things that you could actually watch. Now, you're competing with Netflix and Hulu and Amazon and HBO.
Is Chelsea Handler's show still on? Because that was daily.
Still on.
Yeah?
Yeah. So you've got all these options. And so you're telling me at 11 o'clock, I'm going to turn on a nightly news program when I can go binge something?
Yeah.
I mean, that's tough. So I can see, like... I think a weekly show, it's much easier. Like, I know I can tune in to John Oliver one day a week.
Yeah.
Kind of get my download and then move on.
But also they get a chance to fine tune it.
Yep.
They don't have to react right away. They have more depth to stories, things like that.
The one thing that I missed weekly on missed daily on was right after the RNC, right after the DNC every night. I was jonesing for somebody's commentary. But even then, it was the next day by the time we got to, like, Jon Stewart's take or anything, so...
I feel like we have Twitter just constantly giving us a live, like, best of jokes, and everyone's retweeting everyone.
Yeah,
that's true.
So any good material we might get from them, we're getting from everyone.
Yeah, I mean, is it possible that the Daily Show is kind of a passé thing?
Maybe someone should just, like, live stream Twitter and talk about it.
Yeah, I mean, I like what you said, Grant, because... I mean, the best stuff was on Twitter.
Yeah.
Like, the memes like right in the middle of the RNC and DNC. Mm-hmm. That was some of the best stuff.
Yeah. It is. It's fantastic.
Yeah, I'm really bad about Twitter. I don't use it very often, but inevitably when my Twitter becomes active again is whenever there's a debate. That's when I get on Twitter, because I'll be posting about the debate and I'll be watching what everybody else is saying about it.
Yeah, I wait for the Twitter queen over here to start laughing in the other room.
I wish I could spend all day on Twitter. And, oh my gosh.
And when I hear her laughing and I'm going, well, what's so funny? And she's like, Twitter. And then I'm on Twitter. Right? But award shows and stuff like that, yeah. That's the best stuff.
Yeah.
I mean, absolutely. It's instant and people are funny.
Yeah. It's changed my appreciation of award shows. Randy, I recommend you try that.
I don't have any appreciation for award shows.
I know. Dennis McElwain says, I hear Grant is a big fan of Kevin James. What? Who's better, Kevin James or Rob Schneider? Why is that a question?
What is that? What are you doing?
I don't want to pick either of those guys.
I feel like between the two of them, I've heard Kevin James at least a nice guy. So I'm going to go with Kevin James.
Yeah, I guess I'll take that.
Sure.
Let's just go to the next one. Monty Dat says, I've been trying to ask a question for months, but I keep forgetting to submit it, so finally I remembered. So, if DC had the same type of Netflix deal like Marvel, which four characters / teams would you want to give a Netflix show to? And then he goes on to pick. He would say Jonah Hex for an old throwback Western show, Static Shock, the fun laid-back series, a lot like the old cartoon, Batwoman, rather, a very psychedelic, mystical, and visually beautiful show, taking inspiration from Greg Rucka and J.H. Williams III's Batwoman runs. She would also be the first gay superhero with a leading show. And The Question, a dark, gritty, noir conspiracy detective show. He is absolutely one of the most interesting characters in the DCU who needs more loving.
Well, that was great. That's all the time we have for questions, so I'm totally messing. No, I think, first of all...
It's one of those easy setups for you.
Yeah, I saw this question earlier, and I've been thinking about it. And first of all, the answer that's lame that I want to give is I'd launch all four of those shows. Like, that's a great lineup, and I think he's got a really good cross-section there. I love the inclusion of Batwoman, and I think he's right about The Question. The Question's a really interesting character.
But how do those fit together? I mean, that wouldn't lead to like something like The Defenders.
No, because Jonah Hex is kind of hard to tie in.
Yeah.
But inspired, and also I love Static Shock, and I've always been a fan of Static. But inspired by that and sort of spinning off, I think what I would do is I would definitely do The Question, and I would do it in Hub City, which is sort of another fictional DC city, that's sort of their corrupt version of Chicago. And he's a crusading reporter, and he's also by night he's a vigilante, and I would do Black Lightning, who is a school teacher and social worker, and by night is a vigilante. And I think you can almost do a Wire type thing where there's like, you're looking at this fictional hub city where you've got sort of the school system and then the reporter. And then I think you do someone who's a cop. I would probably lean toward Vigilante, which is another DC character who I think is really interesting. And you could do with sort of what the cops are doing. And then you find one more, like city politics would be ideal. And I'm not sure where you go with politics as far as DC superheroes. I mean, honestly, I want to say you do Blue Beetle and Booster Gold somehow, but there's no way to fit them into this sort of hub city notion that I've got.
Vertigo? Could you go Vertigo?
A little bit. What are you thinking?
Mayor 100?
Mayor 100? No, that's not in the DC universe.
Is he not in the DC universe?
No, that's okay. A separate thing.
I don't know.
But
they folded Watchmen in there somehow.
Yeah, I don't know. I feel like I'm letting you all down as comic book fans, not knowing political guy. But I feel like that's the fourth pillar is a political superhero or someone whose private identity is in the political world, and that's how you tie them all together. They all work in these parts of the city.
I'm not as familiar with DC. I don't know about you guys.
I know just a little. I'd love to know, Randy, what do you think about doing kind of a young, almost like a Teen Titan or Young Justice, so that you've got like four young characters,
yeah,
but it's different, and then they come together kind of as this team. I don't know, something like that that's a little bit different, maybe as dark.
I think that'd be great. I mean, I loved Young Justice.
Oh, that's great.
And we're probably better off. I was kind of excited that Titans was possibly going to be on TNT. I know it was going to be terrible. I'm fully aware. But just the idea of seeing Nightwing and Starfire and Arsenal, all those people on the screen. But yeah, if you did a four-part show that was like, it was Nightwing, and then I do Starfire, where it's like an alien who comes to Earth, and you sort of do a thing where she's learning to assimilate. And then you do maybe Arsenal and do some of his undercover and the drug ring and that kind of thing. And I don't know who your fourth person is. Wonder Girl seems like a good call. I don't know. But you get those four, and then you do like Young Justice or Teen Titans. I think that'd be a great one.
Good crossover.
Yeah.
So, hey, going into the break, I wanted to say that we had a listener who sent me some of their music, Cypher, who we've read a lot of questions from before on the show. And he passed along some of his music that I'd love to actually play on the break for you guys. This is, comes from his album Till Forever Brooklyn. And the song I'm going to play first is called Don't Know Me. And you can get it available at soundcloud.com/cyphermusic. That is P-S-Y-F-E-R. Yeah, give it a listen.
Yo, Chance don't know me yet. Man, Cole don't know me yet. Kendrick don't know me yet. Yo, shout out to his city, sunshine bitches, weed and sex. My brothers, they know me best. Yo, white, I'm on the next. My flight, it got a chef. I'm dreaming, I'm freaking dreaming. This Sunday, it's any given. Tell Ella I'm Willie Beeman. Pacino don't know me yet. De Niro don't know me yet. I grew up with broken dudes. Damn, I get no respect. No cause, I'm such a best.
They don't know, they don't know, they don't know.
All right, so we've got a fair bit of news here, and I want to start with the big story, which is that the Nightly Show was canceled sort of quickly and unceremoniously by Comedy Central. I don't know about you guys. I haven't been watching the Nightly Show. Like, I started watching it, and I just couldn't keep up with the Nightly Show. I couldn't keep up every week watching one show.
The format just kind of threw me off because Larry Wilmore himself is fantastic.
I love Larry
but
Wilmore.
But he does that format where he does a roundtable discussion, and I feel like it segments the show in such a way. I mean, I've complained about this before.
Yeah.
That I felt that it took away from him, and like when, especially in contrast to seeing like what John Oliver does and what Samantha Bee now does, where they just kind of get up there and they are able to just talk directly to the audience. It's trying to kind of round up everyone else on the table and like give everyone equal time. It sort of diminished the show a little bit and diminished like some of the really poignant things he was talking about, especially giving other people a platform to kind of weigh in and make counterpoints. And
right.
Especially just with a 30-minute format. I was a little bit not surprised, I guess, that this got canceled.
Yeah, I think so too. I had the same issue. Did you guys watch it all?
No, I haven't. I mean, the only thing I've really seen him in recently was the Correspondents' Dinner.
Mm-hmm.
And so is his humor pretty similar to that?
Yeah.
Okay.
I've seen a couple episodes, and I'm going to say this again. I said this earlier. It is a short format.
Yeah.
And when I turned it on, I had that same thought as when I'm watching a sitcom is, all right, I'm tuning in. How long before I laugh or I'm turning the channel?
Yeah.
And it took too long. I think his monologue was a little bit like drawn out.
Mm-hmm.
And I was kind of like, all right, I like this guy. I mean, I respect him.
Yeah.
But I'm not laughing. So I'm going to keep going.
Yeah. I think the format was interesting, but it's like, you almost need to be an hour long if you're going to do panels. And I think it looked like a fun show to do. Like, all his panelists always seems like it'd be a fun show to talk. Like, I bet the unedited version where they all were just, like, talking and joking and that kind of thing, that was probably a blast. But I don't know how much fun it was to watch.
The time was too condensed.
The time was definitely a problem.
Yeah.
But I also don't know how much fun it was to watch that kind of thing. Like, you know, it's fun to get together in a room with your friends that you know and, like, argue and talk about stuff. But someone else watching would just be maybe bored to tears.
And Bill Maher does the same format.
I was just going to say that.
But like without restraint.
Yeah.
So all those people can just say the most savage stuff back and forth. And I think that allows so much more freedom than what you're going to get on Comedy Central. Yeah.
I think Chelsea Handler's done something similar where she brings on people and they just kind of talk. But like to your point, Grant, it is without restraint. She is looking for shock value and the people she's bringing on are going to say the outlandish thing where you're going, whoa, what?
So why do you, I mean, what's the restraint about? Is it still time or is it the network or what?
Time, censorship, and balancing among so many different people.
Yeah, it's a fairness thing. He like wants everybody to get their time in, and so they don't confront people on like, when they had like an anti-vaxxer person on, I felt like she just got free reign to say whatever she wants, and then they moved on to the next point. There was no discussion of it.
Oh, interesting.
Yeah, and so I felt like, like all the viewpoints get given equal time, regardless of the validity of various viewpoints. And no, there's nobody pushing back on it because it's just like, okay, move on to the next point.
Well, and that's probably the problem. I mean, I think when I watched some of the coverage of the RNC and the DNC, mm-hmm. the best part was when they started to get into a fight at the end.
Yeah.
And you had them going back and forth and says, no, I said this. And I mean, that was,
yeah,
that was like the best part yeah. of watching it.
Yeah.
I just want the drama.
Yeah.
Yeah. yeah.
But yeah, I've seen, it's funny because I didn't really think a lot of people were watching. I've got a lot of friends on my Facebook feed who are definitely really angry about this. And I'm like, I can't get worked up about it. I feel like that Larry Wilmore is great. And I kind of wonder what would have happened if they'd given him the Daily Show instead of Trevor Noah.
Yeah.
Because I feel like he could definitely be the guy to run that ship and run it with a voice that Trevor Noah just doesn't have. Like Larry Wilmore has a voice. And I think the Nightly Show didn't properly capture it. And possibly
Trevor Noah is just like afraid to use that voice.
Was he always though? Do you think something happened?
He like was coming in, he got a bunch of backlash about like some tweets that he had.
Yeah.
Right.
And maybe he got timid and he just wanted to play everything safe. Maybe he also was told by Comedy Central, like they like, we just want to run a baseline. We don't want you to, I mean, give you time, I guess, maybe to acclimate before you kind of trench in with what your viewpoint is.
Yeah.
I don't know.
Trying to play it safe. Want to keep that job.
Yep.
Kind of respect that.
It's going to end up costing him the job.
Yeah, I may not watch it, but I can kind of respect what he's thinking.
What else we got, Randy?
Okay, so we've also got, this is really interesting. Robert Downey Jr. and True Detective creator Nick Pizzolatto are teaming up for a Perry Mason show on HBO.
Yes.
There is no part of that I was expecting.
I'm struggling with all parts of that sentence right now. I mean, let's think about this for a second. Robert Downey Jr.
Yep.
True Detective.
Yep.
Perry Mason.
Yeah.
Why not?
I mean, that sounds like a stew or gumbo that is either going to be fantastic or a horrible experiment.
Yes. It's either going to be season one of True Detective
or season two.
Yeah, I'm a little bit interested to see what Pizzolatto can do working with Robert Downey Jr. because Robert Downey Jr., I think, now has a bit of a dedication to a certain degree of quality and craft.
Yeah.
Excluding his collaboration with Galifianakis on that one movie.
I think the big story here is Robert Downey Jr. coming to do TV. Like, that's big. Even if it is HBO, that's a big story, I think.
He used to be on TV.
Yeah, but doing it now, it's a very different profile.
But does it really feel like TV? I mean, you're right. It's HBO. It's like a limited, like, six episodes. I mean, it's kind of like a long movie.
That's true.
I mean, it feels a little like, I don't know, but it is special.
And
I mean,
they pretty much let them do whatever they want, which is nice for the most part, I think.
So Making a Murderer on Netflix had one of the big stories. You guys watch Making a Murderer?
Oh, yes.
So Brendan Dassey was, for me, the most heartbreaking part of that. That poor kid who just got railroaded. Well, they overturned his conviction.
Yeah, that seemed to be, like, you know, playing armchair lawyer as you do with these shows.
Sure.
It seemed pretty clear that there was some pretty heavy coercion going on with him. Just he did not seem like the brightest bulb, and they were just like, you did this, didn't you?
Yeah.
Hey, sign this paper. It confessed to everything. He's like, should I?
Yeah.
It's like, aw.
At one point, didn't they tell him, look, sign this and we'll give you a pizza or something?
And let you go home?
Yeah. It was pretty ridiculous. He was like, all right, can I go home now? Well, no, you signed the confession. You're never going home.
Yeah.
What?
Yeah.
Like, but I don't understand basic concepts.
Yeah.
So.
It was really sad.
So I'm glad to see that. Yeah.
And they're making a second season, so maybe it's going to cover what happened in the news. I don't know.
Spoilers for season two.
How do you make a second season out of that?
I don't know. I assume it would be a different case, but it's more of the same.
Oh, really? I thought it was JonBenet Ramsey's case.
No, that's CBS.
Oh, that's a different thing?
CBS is doing JonBenet Ramsey as a six-episode miniseries, which I'm really wary of. I feel like that's dangerous territory to get into.
Yeah, I mean, a second season of the same is probably better, because, I mean, I think a lot of people love the first season of Serial.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And then the second season was kind of like, what?
I'm one of the few.
I had a certain expectation here.
I'm one of the few that actually likes second season of Serial, but it is very different.
Yeah.
And it is definitely not as good. All right. Other news. Flash and Supergirl are having a musical episode, Grant. I know you love musicals.
I included this just because I do not like musicals.
And I love musicals, and I've been wanting this crossover because the people on Flash and Supergirl, most of, like, a bunch of them were on Glee. Jesse L. Martin was a original cast member of Rent. So, like, they've got some talent.
Oh, wow.
And I'm super looking forward to them doing this. Those are both fun shows. It feels like tonally, like, it'll fit with them. And I think they can do it. I'm sure they'll have a reason for it. You're shaking your head, Clyde.
What do you think?
It's a superhero musical crossover.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, I'm not. I don't want any parts of this. I mean,
you love musicals.
I love musicals. I even like crossovers.
Mm.
This seems like a bit too much. And I read that the star of Arrow was like, I'm out. Like, I don't.
Yeah.
And I was thinking, thank you, because I really enjoy Arrow. And the last thing I want to do is to see him singing and dancing. Like, it just sometimes it doesn't fit.
Yeah.
And so I look at this and I'm thinking, all right, Flash and Supergirl strolling along the street, singing and dancing. I don't know. Maybe they're going to do a great job, but I don't know.
Totally in. I do agree, by the way, that Arrow would be a weird fit. Like, that doesn't make any sense. I'd still be in for it because I love musicals and I love the idea of it. But Flash and Supergirl makes sense. I think this is going to be great.
It's so self-indulgent.
Yes.
I hate
Thank
that.
You.
Yes, it's just all these actors that just want another opportunity to sing. So they're going to cram it into a TV series that they don't need to.
But
they're going to probably pull in some ridiculous villain that, like, makes people sing.
Yeah.
And that's going to be their justification for them all singing. And I'm just, oh.
Would you rather they just started singing with no explanation?
No, that's just that. I'm just not going to watch it either way.
You know, the thing is.
Or it could be a dream sequence.
Oh, no. That's what we need. A dream sequence musical.
Yes.
Because that's awesome.
Yes.
Yeah, no.
That's totally what we're going to get.
I am super into it. We'll definitely be talking about it that week on the TV Dudes. And Grant will be scowling at me the whole time.
How are you going to watch it?
Oh, you're mean.
Yeah.
You're super cruel.
Let's go to the next story.
All right. Runaways TV series is coming from Marvel TV and Hulu, and the creators are the Gossip Girls creators are going to be showrunning it. And I think this is interesting for several reasons, one of which is Runaways is a great comic. It's Brian K. Vaughan, who has written Why the Last Man.
Oh, I love Brian K. Vaughan.
And Ex Machina. And Saga. And one of my favorite writers in comics. Runaways was one of his first major things. It's a great concept. It's about a group of teenagers who learn that their parents are part of a criminal organization that's like a conspiracy that runs the world. And some of their parents are super scientists, some of their time travelers, wizards, mobsters.
It's Sky High.
And no, it is not Sky High.
It's not Sky High. Okay.
And so they all have sort of powers related to this. Like the girl who learns that she's an alien has alien powers. And one of them has like all this technology. One of them has a velociraptor that's like bonded to her. And it's really fun. It's great. It's very
sorry. Character- that's such a weird one to just drop in. Girl has a velociraptor that's bonded to her?
What? It's
like
great.
Like Quanto.
Like Quanto. Not that bonded. No.
Okay.
It's very character driven, and it's set very deeply in the Marvel universe, but sort of off to the side where it's like these, you know, teenage characters who know all these heroes, but don't know any of them. Like go up and talk to them, so you can make reference to it without having to like bring in. It doesn't. You don't have to do a thing where it's like Supergirl, where the big question was, where's Superman? It makes sense these kids don't really know Captain America. They can't just call him up. But I think that's interesting enough. But then Hulu having it is interesting because Marvel has these relationships with ABC, with Netflix, and now we're seeing them expand. Like they're doing Freeform, which is ABC Family, but that's another sort of stream because that's where Cloak and Dagger is going to be. And now they're doing Runaways on Hulu. So Marvel's kind of spreading out a little bit and seeing where different things fit. I don't know. You guys haven't... Nobody's read Runaways, right? Nobody has read Runaways here?
No, nope. Not yet.
Okay. But what do you guys think about this?
I mean, I'm interested. I think a different take from Hulu. Because I think when we see what Netflix is kind of dark,
mm-hmm.
right? ABC.
It's too saccharine.
Yeah. I mean, it's pretty sweet. And it, not only that, but, you know, you're always looking for that big, like, superhero to never show up on Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D. And so I think I'm interested to see what does that Hulu style, that Hulu brand bring to it? Is it going to be something that's, you know, more commercial or not, more independent? So I think that's interesting. And like you said, Randy, this is something that I think most people don't have a whole lot of experience with, which is part of the problem with the superhero genre, is that we come into it with all these expectations. If you've read the comics, right? So you watch X-Men and you're upset because Colossus doesn't look the way you thought he would, or, you know, Cyclops doesn't act the way you hoped he would.
Right.
This is going to be kind of new to everyone, and I think that'll be kind of interesting.
Yeah, I agree.
The art just looks different from anything I've seen before, so that makes me interested.
Yeah, the artists, when they were doing this, they were sort of, this was when manga was sort of at its peak.
Ah.
And they were trying to sort of drift off some of that manga, and so it has a little bit of that that style to it. So yeah, I'm super excited about this. This is a favorite comic of mine, and I think it's going to be interesting to see them do something that's not in the sort of dark, you know, street vein of like Daredevil and Jessica Jones and that kind of thing.
Yeah, and Luke Cage.
Man, I'm excited for Luke Cage.
That is going to be great.
All right. Final bit of news, and this is just some good news. Mr. Robot has been officially renewed for a season 3 by USA.
Yay! No, so I am shocked. Yeah. I am absolutely shocked. I didn't know this was coming.
Yeah.
Did you guys see the recent episode?
I'm behind.
I'm slightly behind by one episode.
I kind of never say this, but if you guys recorded it on DVR, and tough luck to you, Randy, it is one to watch like all the way through with commercial breaks.
What?
Okay. What? Really?
Yeah.
Okay.
It's kind of awesome.
All right, we'll check it out.
Yeah. All right, so going into the break, I want to again give a plug to Cypher, and this is another track off of his album called Backpacks.
Okay. All right. Yo, where the trees at? Right here. Right here. By the backpack. All right. Let's go. Let's rock. On me. On me. Let's do it. Get 'em high. Get 'em high. Get 'em high. We gonna touch the sky. I was on my own. Thinking about the throne. Revolution is home. And tell the vibes. You working 9 to 5. That's your first kid. Baby mama love you more than her first dad. Real life. You in the car now, thinking when your side bitch gonna calm down. Took it a Friday, and it's Tuesday. 2 for 20, babe, made you rock the couge. Looking at you sideways, but you faded down. Last night when you hit it with the knot right now. I got a baby to feed, I can't pipe you down. But if you give me 40 minutes, I will be right down. Then she text you back, saying fuck.
The Get Down is the latest show to drop on Netflix. It is a 6-episode series. I'm not sure if this is going to have a second season.
It's the second season comes in 2017. It's a 2-part first season, basically.
Oh, is it?
Yeah.
Oh, interesting. I already don't know some stuff about it. But this is produced by Boz Luhrmann. It is the story of how hip-hop originated in the Bronx in 1977 alongside disco. And the opening episode was 1.5 hours.
Yeah, and you guys talked about this on Pilot Watching, that it felt like a movie.
Yes, definitely. Yeah. And it took a while to wrap my head around it.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It is a little weird. Like, I wonder if it was made that way. Like, I don't think Netflix does pilots, but it almost feels like they did this as like a proof of concept pilot and then did the series. It's weird. I don't think that's what happened, but it's the feel it had.
It's been in pre-production for about 2.5 years, yeah. I heard. So maybe they struggled with...
I just assume that this was, you know, Baz Luhrmann's first TV kind of shot at TV. Mm-hmm. And so he kind of went to what he knew, what was movies, yeah. And it just kind of, you know, went long. And you're on Netflix, so you've got a little bit of free reign to make it as long as you want.
Yeah.
But it felt it. Mm-hmm. And we mentioned this on the show. I think there was a payoff, though, which they need it, right?
Yeah.
So if you watch it and you're struggling a little bit, just know if you keep watching the last like 15-10 minutes, you know, it picks up considerably.
It definitely does. And that's like one of those things. It's like there's a lot of plotting parts to that first episode that make me go, okay, this is just jumping back and forth between all these characters. There's a lot of the show does this throughout the series, but there's a lot of this juxtaposing of two different scenes, and that kind of like scales out the timeline in a weird way.
Mm-hmm. It does.
Like you'll have something like currently happening, then they'll cut to this other scene and it'll seem like time has passed, and then they'll cut back to that same first scene and you're like, oh, time hasn't passed. Wait, what's going on?
Yeah, they definitely play with time, especially later on in the episode, later on in the series, when they're going around and they're showing the song. Is this in the fifth or sixth episode when they're showing the song and the song developing with Mylene?
Yeah, fifth episode.
Yep. Yeah, and they're showing it, and then they're talking about, yeah, we can record in your church, and then they cut to them recording in the church, and they're cutting between that. The recording like weeks from then. And then it all developing, and then at the same time they're jumping over to
Ezekiel.
Yeah. And I love that, but it could definitely be a little dizzying.
Well, I think just like in the first episode, that was a little bit of, it took a little bit of getting used to that. Yeah. This is kind of part of the style, that as well as these kind of cuts to some actual 70s footage of the Bronx, intercut with some like new takes that they're like making look like that.
Yeah.
And so initially it took a little bit for me to get into the show.
Get into the get down.
Yeah. But as it went along, after I got past that first episode, and maybe this is to the credit of other people in a way emulating Baz Luhrmann, but doing kind of a little bit more what I'm used to standard TV fare, I started liking it a lot more after the pilot. What did you guys think overall?
I like it.
Yeah.
I like it a lot. Like we've been talking about, first 90 minutes was tough. Actually, the first hour was tough. The last 30 minutes of the pilot, I feel like that's when the story started to come together for me.
Yeah.
I didn't watch any trailers purposely. I try not to do that. I like to go into things with a fresh mind. Mm. And so I didn't really know that it was about the birth of hip hop.
Yeah.
So the whole disco, the kung fu, all that, I was like, okay, so many stories. This is intense. Yeah. Where are we going? What are we doing? Can I stay with it? And I'm really glad I did.
Yeah. I actually thought the first... I want to say the 11 minutes. So it came out on Friday at like I think Central Standard Time was like 2 a.m.
Mm-hmm.
That morning, like I got up and watched the first like 11 minutes.
Okay.
And I was like, oh, this is great, right? And it was moving and it was fantastic. Mm-hmm. The next hour was intense.
Yeah.
And it was a blur, and I was like, wow, there's all these characters and they're all over the place. And I was kind of like, I love the first 11 minutes. Where are we going? And then it started to make more sense. Mm-hmm. So I think if we are talking about the pilot, I really liked it.
Yeah.
I was a little worried as I got into probably about episode 3 and 4. I was all the way in. Like I was like, I love this series.
Yeah. I fell in love with it in the first like 5 minutes. I can't remember exactly what it was in the first 5 minutes, but I was in love with it early on.
Was it when Ezekiel kind of did his rap to Mylene when he was talking about...
Yes, that's what it was.
Was it? When you sing, it's like what red velvet feels like.
Yeah.
That one.
Yeah. It's like what butterscotch tastes like. Sometimes when they're warming up. Like, yeah, it was just... It was so perfect. Like, the chemistry between those two leads was so good, and the words were so good, and I was holding in. Now... I'm a Baz Luhrmann fan. I actually love Moulin Rouge. And when we saw the trailer for this, I think I was the most excited of the three TV dudes for it.
You were super giddy.
I was super into it from the get-go.
And I do not like Baz Luhrmann. Yep. I was actually complaining a bit off mic about how I don't really like musicals.
Yep.
So I was very wary of this. I do not like when you have a otherwise grounded television show that will break out into song and suddenly everyone will like be dancing together and they seem to know the choreography, like Glee or whatever. Right. It doesn't work for me. But this show doesn't really do that. Most places where people break out into singing, it makes sense. There's a couple times when Mylene and her girls will like start kind of dancing and singing, and I'm like, wait, what's going on? This is a little bit much for me. And the show certainly gives into some sappy moments and some corny moments with some of that. But overall, I really like fell in love with the stories of both Mylene trying to become a disco star and Ezekiel both finding himself and getting in on the ground floor of the birth of hip hop.
I think Justice Smith, who plays Ezekiel, I think he's a true find. Like, I thought he was really fantastic, and they did a good job of making him, you know, definitely flawed. He's got, you know, he's definitely like, I can't remember if he's actually dealing drugs at some point, but I know that Shaolin is, and some of the stuff that he does, it's like, okay, he's maybe not.
I think the most he does is during the blackout, he
Well, they steal.
They go to steal the equipment.
They loot the equipment from Les Inferno.
And he helps push a body into the river.
Yeah. But I couldn't feel too bad about either of those, actually, because I was like,
okay. It was kind of his idea. Yeah. He was like, let's just keep going.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, I didn't have too much sympathy for Les Inferno. That was run by gangsters. They were going to steal. I got
that. That part, though, was really weird how they cut that particular scene where during the blackout and looting the Les Inferno, because it made it look like they were actually robbing the music store where they're looking at the equipment from that one guy where they bought him.
That was everybody else robbing them.
Right. Yeah, because they would cut to that guy and he's like outside his store, like upset while
people
are going in
and out.
That was
kind of confusing.
And so it's like, wait, what are they robbing? Is it this place or is it that other place? And later in the story, it's revealed they took it from Les Inferno.
It made me think that they were showing that they were a lot like the other people outside, right? Like,
but they're stealing from gangsters, and we can all get behind that.
Yeah. I do it every week. Wait, what?
Oh. Newsflash.
I also think the Jimmy Smits playing Francisco Papafuerte.
Papafuerte.
He is almost too big a lot of times. Like, he's definitely on the edge of chewing scenery, if not right there chewing scenery a lot of the time. I really like him. But he sometimes goes a little big, I think. And that's very Baz Luhrmann-y, I think, the way he plays him.
I thought he was actually great. What I didn't like was Giancarlo Esposito playing opposite him. I that one didn't work as well for me because he's such a hothead over the top about like every situation. I'm like, does this guy have any cool?
He's kind of one note. He's a little one note.
Well, I'm kind of surprised that he went from being that hothead to then in the last few, a couple episodes where he's just so mild and sitting and not really, I mean, there's just not a lot of middle ground.
Yeah. I feel like it was a scene in, you know, that club where I guess Papafuerte kind of told everybody about his past. After that, he was just like, whatever you want. Like, he was done.
I'm not going to say anything.
Yeah. Which
everyone will forget.
If there was one character that I think could have been written with a little bit more depth, it's that character.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Especially if you've got Giancarlo Esposito, right?
Yeah.
Like, I mean, he's got range and depth and talent that you can really tap into. But the character was just kind of like
high and low.
And just kind of really on the periphery. And I thought you could have made him a little bit richer.
There's definitely someone I do want to bitch about, like, a lot. And that is, what's his name? Will Smith's kid.
Jaden Smith.
Oh, my gosh. Dizzy? Every line that kid, Dizzy, that little Ruby. robot delivered, it was just terrible.
See, did you not? I thought that was kind of part of the character, that he was like, he's like the artistic one who's sort of off in his own world and always seems a little sort of out of sync with everybody else.
But his delivery's so wooden.
Yeah. I don't know. I actually thought Jaden Smith did okay in this role because he was playing the character, which is sort of spacey and a little bit out there, and I felt like he did okay.
I don't know.
I'll say that I think that if you had hopes that Jaden Smith was going to be, you know, a superstar on the likes of his father, I think he got a little bit exposed here next to, you know, Shameik Moore and Justice Smith. I mean, they were amazing. Now, I'm not saying that, you know, Jaden won't have a wonderful acting career.
Yeah.
I'm just saying they had some star power that I don't know that he had in this moment.
He has no charisma. It's like that didn't get passed on from Will Smith at all.
I mean, his afro was nice, though. He had a very nice fro.
Yeah. It's looking gigantic.
Yeah.
Well, I do think that's one of the other things. I thought was another thing you expect from Luhrmann is that the production values on this, whether it's like the graffiti or the periodness of it all, it's really, really nice. Like, it looks great.
It looks amazing. Yeah. It's so good.
And the detail was just incredible. I mean, I read an article that they talked about. There's a moment, and this might have been in like the first episode, where the Shaolin Fantastic character says, you know, yeah, I got my sneakers from AJ Lester's, and that's this throwback to the store on 125th up in Harlem that you have to live there. There's only like 500 people in the world who really get that reference, but they're going to hear that and go, oh, yeah, no. AJ Lester's, 125th. I shopped there. That's where the ballers were.
That's pretty nuts.
Yeah, that's great. And that's something that I didn't get out of this because we talked about this a little bit off mic, that my knowledge of hip hop and rap is pretty limited. I've gotten into it more as I get older, But when I was younger, like I listened to the Beastie Boys and Run DMC, and that's about as far as I got. And so I knew who Grandmaster Flash was, but I didn't know really anything about him. And so this was all really educational to me. And at the same time, I'm like, I don't know how much this is real and how much of it they're making up.
Well, but they actually had Grandmaster Flash as one of the consultants on this. I think I read that it was like had...
Not just him. I mean, the article
that said... Nas, who was doing a lot of the writing of the music, and then...
Who Key actually Curtis has Blow. Met.
Oh, you met Nas?
Oh, yeah. I'm a big fan. Big fan. Met him, hugged him, got his autograph.
Almost dated him.
I did not almost date him. I dated his... ex-wife's boyfriend. That's the connection.
That's right. 3 degrees. That's not
I
bad.
Know. Yeah.
It's a little close.
No, it was an amazing moment when I met Nas. I was working in a sneaker store in Queens, and everyone knew I was a big fan, and he's from Queens. And so basically, people called me on the phone from upstairs. Everyone, pretty much everything stopped in the store. And everyone said, Key, you need to come downstairs. Nas is here. And I was wearing the best outfit of my life. Just happened that day. I don't know. It was just an amazing moment. I walked downstairs.
Life? Like, that's the best outfit?
I mean, it was a great outfit. I have pictures of this. This is just that day. And I walked down the stairs. It's like a movie. He's standing there with the Bravehearts. This is like 2001. And I gave him a hug, got his autograph, which I lost.
Oh,
and it was just great moment. Yeah. Listen, that can make us money if I still had that thing. Yeah, so I'm a big fan. But I was a fan before.
But yeah, they had a ton of people consulting on this. And yeah, it was. I just think that the music is another thing I want to mention. Because the music throughout this, whether it's the original stuff that they have in here or the score of the times, there's so much great music in here. I thought they did a great job of building that in.
The lyrics that they have Ezekiel writing and saying, it's very powerful, and in a way it felt a little bit more like a modern lyrical style kind of being transplanted to the 70s, because I feel like there was more complexity in like how they're breaking up some of the segments that I think was a little bit more of like an evolution of the writing style.
Yeah.
I could see that a little bit. If you go back and listen to like, you know, Grandmaster Flash, if you listen to like Cool Herc, if you listen to them, some of them, it was the style wasn't as polished.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, you could tell it was new. And so, yeah, I could see how what we're seeing is, it's kind of if somebody went back in time and said, all right, I'm going to rap like this.
Yeah, but I think that gives it a little bit more of the a modern pop factor that makes the music so catchy to us rather than yesterday I went and got my shoes and I went down the street or something like that. That's not going to be as good as like kind of intercutting the different lyrics like in the mid sections of the stanzas or whatever.
Well, they do that great bit where they're intercutting Mylene's song with him rapping, and it's not, I don't feel like it's in the fifth episode. I feel like it happens early on.
I think it's the fourth episode.
Yeah.
Because Key, you were watching, I was like, and I think you said, it's like R&B and hip hop combined in this one moment.
I thought it was the fifth episode.
I don't know, maybe.
Yeah.
Well, maybe we're. I don't know if we're talking about.
Because there is one where he's talking about. He's sort of the lyrics are all about how there's something. He's sort of referencing what they did with the car, and how there's like things you can't go back that you can't do, you can't take back. And she's sort of on her rising action as she's finding her song, and he's sort of going through this dark period. It's a really great contrast, the two songs.
I didn't like a lot of the back and forth switching because
really
it didn't. I didn't feel like the songs that she was singing, the rapping he was doing, melded very well.
Okay.
And maybe it's just for me.
Oh, I loved every time.
It should be very intentional. It should really blend together, but it felt like so jarring each time they'd cut scenes for me. And there were one or two. I do remember in the fifth episode when she's singing with the church choir and he's practicing that we already noted. I thought that one was integrated a lot better and to the point where I was like, yeah, okay, I can consistently like bob my head. The beat seems consistent throughout all of this.
Yeah.
But other times I was just like, I don't like how they keep intercutting them. Stylistically, it just felt weird to me.
What do you guys think of the framing sequence where we're seeing Ezekiel grown up, obviously like a successful rapper, and he's sort of, it's almost like he's done a concept album where he's like telling the story of how he grew up, and it's like every track happens to be about that episode. Do you feel like that was contrived? Did you like it?
I didn't love it.
Okay.
I mean, I thought it was interesting. What I really thought was interesting was David Diggs, who plays Thomas Jefferson in the Hamilton musical.
Played. No longer there.
He's actually that character. So that's him. Yeah. But outside of that, like, I thought it was a somewhat creative way to do a previously on The Get Down.
Mm-hmm.
This happened.
Mm-hmm.
But outside of that, it was just kind of like, all right, well, I'm more interested in 1977 than I am this. And I thought the music from 1977 was a little bit better than that sequence.
It doesn't bother me. I don't think it adds much, but I don't think it takes away a lot either. Yeah.
Well, there could have been more power if it was just like just in the first episode, and then you kind of pull back to that in the finale. That is like, reminder, like, we introduced this in the beginning, but you may have forgotten, like, he obviously goes and makes it really big.
See, that's why I liked it, is it sort of, it undercuts the tension a little bit. Like, whatever happens, we know that Ezekiel makes it out.
Well, that's what I was going to say. He doesn't die.
Yeah.
what we know.
I like that we know that. We don't know. I mean, it's obviously he still goes through some stuff, but I like that we know he's going to make it out. But the question, I think it begs the question for me of, well, where's everybody else? Like, is that indicating something about Shao? Is like, he's talking about Shaolin in the reverent tones of someone who was a huge influence on his life is no longer there. He's not talking about like his buddy that he hangs out with anymore. Right. And so I feel like that's pointing us in the direction of Shao maybe having a tragic arc. And I'm wondering the same about Mylene. Like, Mylene's not referenced here. That doesn't mean anything necessarily, but I feel like it's there partly to show that Ezekiel makes it out, but maybe nobody else does.
I mean, that's interesting because we don't know what's going to happen to everybody else. And they're supposed to be this crew, this family, mm-hmm. You know, and I think there is some tension there. I mean, you look at Shao, who is, you know, he's got one foot in this underworld and one foot in this music. And I think that's really the big theme of the show is everybody's got a foot in and out.
I want to talk about that for a second, because the first time that he left the drug game, I felt like that was too easy to leave when she was like, well, when you come back, it's going to be worse for you. Like I felt like it was too easy, both on his decision point and both her letting him go. You know, I didn't like that. I felt like they have all this time. Let's pull that out, you know, draw that out a little bit, give him a little bit more time to have a hard time getting out.
Yeah, that's true. I do wonder though, if the reason she lets him out is because she knows he's not going to make it.
Mm-hmm.
Well, I mean, she burns down
his
spot, which has all his equipment.
Yeah.
It's like, yeah, she let him out, but she's also taken away the one thing that took him from her.
That was her?
Yeah.
Yeah, that was her. She sent, her gang, yeah.
She sent the, you know, she sent them to burn down the building.
Yeah. I think that's the thing is like, she was already, I mean, Annie, we don't see a ton of her, but we definitely get the sense that she's a schemer and she's smart and she's up on everything, that she was already thinking, okay, well, I can use this to put him further under my thumb.
Mm-hmm. And he had to. He had to come back. He had no money.
Yeah.
And so if he wanted DJ equipment, he wanted records, she knew he would have no other choice but to come back to her. And when he did, she'd really own him.
Yeah.
Right? I completely missed that part.
I missed that too.
Yeah.
Yeah. It was short. So when they kind of came in, it was mentioned. They were kind of talking about it. And that's why they kind of blew up the building.
So was it the warlords or other kids?
It was the warlords, but they had mentioned in, I think, kind of one of the clips that the warlords were being paid to burn buildings.
Right.
Yeah.
So I just didn't realize she was in charge.
So we only kind of touched on it, but the arc with Jimmy Smits and the mayor and kind of like touching on the politics of New York at the time of the Bronx.
Mm-hmm.
What'd you guys think about that? Like how that kind of fit with everything else?
I love the juxtaposition of the two worlds. I love that we're getting this, you know, growth of hip hop, that's grimy, gritty situation, these people trying to get out of their lives. And then you have the politics, which is also gritty and grimy and dirty on the other hand. But it's just great to kind of get a full picture of the city.
Mm. Look, I always say kind of on our show, I love to learn stuff by watching TV.
Mm-hmm.
And this made me open up Wikipedia and start looking at like the different mayors of New York.
Oh, yeah.
And kind of wanting to know, well, what happened with like, you know, Beam and Koch. And so I'm fascinated by, not only are we getting the birth of hip hop and watching these DJs and these MCs create this art form, this musical genre, but in the background, we're watching, you know, the idea that the South Bronx is burning. We're watching the change in the New York mayoral race. And we're seeing what happens at the blackout, right? Like, these are real events. And so for me, it's kind of exciting to see that. As far as kind of the Papa Fuerte character, you're seeing this figure who also has a foot in each world, right?
Yeah.
And they really haven't drawn that out too much. Like, there's, I think in the first episode, there's a scene where he, or first, second episode, where he's like telling somebody, look, like, you know, we're not ready to make him disappear yet, but, you know, be on standby, and you know what happens if you don't. Like, he's got this underworld kind of...
some shady gangster going on there.
Some shady gangster stuff. But then they kind of move away from it a little bit, mm-hmm. so...
We don't see that he's as deep in as, what's her name?
Fat Annie.
Yes.
Yeah. Well, we do see him in the first episode. He rolls up on the Warriors.
Yep.
And they obviously, like, they respect him to some degree. And I've wondered if there's more that we're not seeing, but like, if he's more connected to that side of the world than we've seen. But yeah, they definitely go in a different direction where it's more of a, he's got a longtime flame for his brother's wife, and that his affection for his niece is like really true and honest and not.
You mean his daughter?
Oh yeah. I mean his daughter. Yes. I mean, she's his niece, but yeah. But yeah, yeah, totally his daughter. But I really like that. They gave him that connection to the family. Like, he really does still love them. It's not a thing where like she's holding it over him,
right?
Or that he's looking to use his niece for his own gain or whatever. Like it's genuine affection. And I think even when we do find out sort of more of the secrets and they outright reveal that she's his daughter, because they didn't really say it out front, right? Like, it's easy to pick up on, but they don't ever actually say it, do they?
No. I think in episode 6.
Yeah.
One of the last scenes, they may say something.
Yeah.
Like, because he says, you know, she's just like her mother and something. So it's like they almost say it, but they don't quite say it.
He says something at one point where I feel like he almost says, like, our daughter or something like that. And
I'm your dad.
Yeah.
It's a little bit too much there.
But I like that he's got a nobility to him, even as you see it, this guy's very much a slick operator kind of thing.
Yeah, I think what I love is that it's not a soap opera.
Yeah.
And what I mean by that is, in a soap opera, everybody is shady, right? Yeah. Everybody's got this mm-hmm. secret. Everybody, like, you're like, oh man, these threads are going to get pulled and everything's going to fall apart. As far as this Papa Fuerte character is, that is Mylene's safe space, right? Like, he is protecting her.
Yeah.
And it is an honest, genuine, like, I'm not in this so that, you know, I can have something later.
Mm-hmm.
It's just genuine love. And he does. And, you know, you get the feeling that he does want the best for the Bronx. And so even if he kind of has some other stuff going on, you know, it's not going to be this twisted thing where he's the villain.
Yeah.
Necessarily. Yeah. So I like that.
So I guess wrapping up, what'd you guys think about how this ends? It's, I guess, first part. Do you guys like the finale? Are you guys excited to see more?
I thought that the final get down, basically the musical battle that goes on, I thought was really fantastic.
I'd agree. I think the music and like the last, I'd say maybe the last couple scenes of 5 and then 6, that musical battle, like I was all in. I was like, this is what I've been waiting for.
Yeah.
It's a great payoff. I love the last episode. My only concern is, you know, back to the whole, it kind of feels like a movie.
Mm-hmm.
It felt a little complete to me, right? As in, okay, the sequel might come out and yeah, I'll go watch it. But I felt like the story, like I could close a chapter and I don't have this.
You don't really need it.
If it came on and I didn't watch it, I wouldn't look in the mirror and be like, oh, I messed it up. I don't know what happened. You know, I want to see the next season, but I do feel like wow, they ended it in a really kind of comforting place.
Yeah.
Like, I'm good.
Yeah.
I like that. Comforting. That's good. I think that that final scene where Mylene is really seeing Zeke in his element is fantastic. I mean, mm-hmm. you go from episode one where she is his friend but doesn't really want to give him the time of day past that. And I love that where she falls in love with him. It's kind of where I fell in love with you, is when he's doing like the thing he's best at. You know, yeah. and so that's really cool to see their progression. It's not when he's chasing her the whole time. Mm-hmm. It's when he's doing the thing that he's best at. And I really like that.
I think it's interesting, though, because she never likes what he's doing. Yeah. At no point does she get the get down.
No.
Right? Like, she's like, oh, it's noise. It's garbage. Mm-hmm. And so I think she sees him, like you said, doing what he's, like, created to do. Like, that's his thing. You know, but she's kind of looking like, I don't really get this.
Until the end, though. She seems to get it at the end. It's last thing. She's like, look at Zeke. He's so sexy yeah. up there. He's in his element.
Or she gets him.
She gets him. Okay. I don't think she gets what he does. And I think we're all here in 2016. What we know is disco is probably dying.
Yeah.
Right? And rap is about to, like, yeah. go somewhere else.
Yeah.
And, you know, to your point, Randy, we see in those clips, in the framing clips, like, we know he's going to make it.
Yeah.
And, you know, she's kind of looking like, oh, what is he doing? I love him, but I'm not sure about what he's doing.
Right.
But we know, like, he's right where he's supposed to be. Like, his timing couldn't be more perfect.
You know, I had this sort of feeling that we were going to get a reveal with him in modern day doing his wrapping up on stage, that he was going to be like an opening act for her.
Ooh.
Like it was gonna show that they are still together, but that she's actually the bigger act now, and like in some sort of
Jay-Z Beyonce.
I was thinking
Jay-Z Beyonce kind of thing. Like he's doing opening act, and then she's just everyone freaks out as soon as she
Although,
comes on stage.
I gotta say, if you gotta be second fiddle, being Jay-Z is not a bad place to be.
Nope.
Because
except for after Lemonade. Yeah, that was a little rough. I guess we all really enjoyed the show.
I loved it.
Yeah, it was a fun experience. And I think it's interesting, you said that it felt really complete, like coming off of Stranger Things, which also seemed to wrap up in a very complete way.
Yeah.
This is kind of like Netflix is like, just in case we're only going to do one, let's end it very concisely.
Hmm.
Well, that's interesting. I wonder if the Danger Zone for Netflix, who really they've been on hitting on all cylinders for a long time now,
right?
Is they've got to watch that. Don't do sequels, things that don't need sequels. Like if you do a complete mm-hmm. story, because that's going to be that they're going to be doing the second season of Stranger Things.
Mm-hmm.
They're going to be the second part of The Get Down. They're going to be going into things that maybe they don't need to go back to. And they're going to have to watch that they don't do something that tarnishes what was already there. Like that's the danger I think they got to watch for.
Yeah.
But so far I trust them to do it.
Well, and I think the beauty of Netflix is they've got this catalog, right? That
yeah.
you can just kind of go to. And you pull up, and not everything's great, but
yeah.
it does have these kind of complete like movies and TV series. And so I think you're kind of right. If they don't water it down, then they're gonna have a really great catalog.
Yeah.
Right. But yeah, they're absolutely gonna do a second season.
Oh yeah.
And so I'm excited.
Well, thank you guys so much for joining us, Key, Clyde. We really appreciate it. Where can people find you?
You can find us at pilotwatching.com. We're mm-hmm. also on iTunes or Google Play or kind of wherever you listen to podcasts.
Also, you can find us on Twitter at pilotwatching and on Facebook.
Excellent. Well, this has been a very fun discussion on The Get Down. We had a great time. Randy, thank you.
Thanks, Grant.
And listeners, we really appreciate you guys checking out the show once again and all of your support. Until next week,
TV Dudes out.
Vaughan Methodist, that's Park Slope on 2nd Street, right by the church. They know my brothers, they know my mother, Miss Mary King in the schoolyard on the hustle. But she didn't hustle, she would peddle what she got from soup sales. I remember that kind of vividly. Vision walking me and looking at the centipedes. I was just a youngin', Gully wasn't thuggin', had a life to live. So he's on the move, he got caught up. And so it goes, a story of another black damaged soul. And after that, it's kind of fuzzy. We moved in sheep's head, mama got some money. Show Parkway, summer days. We chasing Darlene through the hallways.
You need me. You need me. And I need you.
The TV Dudes is an independently run podcast. It is exclusively listener supported. If you'd like to help us out, go to patreon.com/TV Dudes. You can like us on Facebook and on Twitter at TV Dudes, and help us out on iTunes by giving us a 5-star rating and writing a review. To find out more about us, go to thetvdudes.com. I'm Grant Davis. Thanks for listening.
Till forever Brooklyn, till forever Brooklyn, my heart will remain forever Brooklyn. Till forever Brooklyn, till forever Brooklyn, my heart will remain forever Brooklyn. You want my story? Well, here it goes. Love, hope, struggle in the same clothes. Well, here it goes. Love, hope, struggle in the same clothes. Till forever Brooklyn, till forever Brooklyn, my heart will remain forever Brooklyn. Till forever Brooklyn, till forever Brooklyn, my heart will remain forever Brooklyn. You want my story? Where it goes, love, hope, struggle in the same clothes. Yeah, that's good. Yeah, run that back.